This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Michigan has such an integral place in American history and in Black history. It seems kind of crazy that kids grow up here maybe not knowing about what was going on in Detroit in 1967 or some major figures in the civil rights movement who were from Michigan. As protests against police brutality continue, many activists are pointing out the fact that systemic racism isn't just a problem in policing. It touches every aspect of American society, and that includes education. Today, we wanted to talk a little bit more about how the U.S. educational system reinforces inequalities of a broader world and what a better model for curriculum might look like. Matinga Ragatz is Stateside's education commentator. She is a consultant and a former Michigan Teacher of the Year. Matinga, nice to hear that voice.
Hello.
You're a teacher of long experience. Could you tell us what kind of grade you would give schools when it comes to teaching and talking about race?
Well, first, I want to move away from the grading. I just kind of leave that for like meat quality. So instead, I would like to talk about just basically assessing where we're at right now and assessing the effectiveness of what the education system has done when it comes for race. And I'm going to start with this premise that, you know, racism has the ability to morph and go underground. And so that's basically what we're talking about today. We're talking about this underground racism that is not overt to the practitioners of education. So, you know, I want to really highlight that if we are not talking about race, like schools, we don't talk about race, it's become this fear that we're going to separate people by talking about race, by talking about economic levels and things like that. But what has happened is by not talking directly about race, we have reduced ourselves to talking and using dog whistles and coded language to talk about race. Does that make sense?
Letting other people frame the conversation instead of having it in our schools?
Yes, for sure. And then, you know, teachers use terms like free and reduced lunch to describe a certain population of kids versus terms like, you know, maybe like farm rural American schools or terms like the heartland of America. And then you just tell me what races you associate with each term.
Yeah, I think a lot of Americans of your generation and mine probably had a pretty limited exposure to Black history while we were in school. Would you say that that's changed?
It has. It has to an extent. And but you got to remember that the majority of U.S. teachers are white, and the majority of the teachers of color, of course, are teaching in the schools with greater diversity, which means white schools have white teachers. And white communities are systematically segregated. We all know this. And so an educator that's been teaching 30 years in a community can be completely removed from the Black experience. So, you know, they are teaching, mind you, from their own vantage point and from their lived experiences. In the 21st century, that's just, you know, that's something that we need to change. Where teachers, it's not about book knowledge anymore. It's really about experiential knowledge. So when a teacher is talking about racism, they can only teach according to the relations that they have, maybe you know, cordial relations I'm talking about that they have with people of color that they occasionally may meet and they're not necessarily part of their intimate circle. So I'm not throwing blame here. I'm just explaining that teachers of like white teachers are teaching from their experiences and not because they want to somehow be an obstacle to race.
Right. Does Michigan have anything like state curriculum guidelines or straight up rules about what kids need to know about Black history?
Well, yeah, we have our curriculum, and the curriculum, of course, is very much written to, and forgive the term, to whitewash some of the more horrific parts of American history. You know, so this is where I think sometimes the curriculum, again, we're thinking about kids as, you know, we cannot expose the kids to this because they're too sensitive. But what we are doing is becoming part of the problem, because you will see that racism turns its ugly head in the curriculum when you constantly depict people of color as victims and you're only telling the story of their struggle, but you do not specifically tell the story about how they began their struggle. So when you're specifically talking about, for example, slavery, right? You don't talk about slavery in terms of like human trafficking and rape and murder and complete and absolute devastation of somebody's heritage and uprooting somebody's culture that took thousands of years to build. And now 500 years later, they're still trying to build it. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, combine that with the rather grand narratives that we get of white America, the almost godlike status of the founding fathers. And it gets to be a pretty messed up, a pretty disjointed picture for school kids to take in. If we did say we want people to hear more about the continuity of Black culture, we want them to hear about things like the Tulsa Massacre of 1921, or we want them to hear about Juneteenth as being more of an Independence Day than July 4th Independence Day in a lot of ways. What would it look like to shift the curriculum, especially with this understanding that you're talking about, that a lot of Michigan's teachers are white?
Well, there's got to be a concerted effort, because you got to understand the power of whitewashing a curriculum. You know, we have to make sure that we teach the children the workings of the politics of race, and how a dominant culture is structured to create this hierarchy of human value, right? And so what I'm trying to say is there's a clear demarcation that some people are simply more valuable than other people, especially when it comes to race. And there are people who believe to this day that when people of color begin to populate their schools and their suburbs, it devalues their property, and it devalues the quality of their school. And so I want to ask the question, you know, what exactly are you saying by that? And if you are believing that, or at least living in that environment, what are you not teaching these kids so that they can in the future not propagate this problem?
Matinga, you worked in a mostly white suburban school district for a pretty long time as a Black woman. How did you talk to your students about race?
Well, I just put it out there. I spend a lot of time recreating my curriculum to the, you know, consternation of my administrators, to make sure that we're talking about race, about colorism, and about culture. I turned a small, like a minimal geography class into a global studies class, specifically to intentionally talk about, quote, the others. And so for me, it was very easy. Students of color in my school, you know, were drawn to my classroom because that was a safe space. That was a place where we could take off the superhero cape, mind mm-hmm. you. And so for me, it was a no-brainer to make sure that the kids that I saw myself in those kids, and I wanted to make sure that they felt like their histories and their heritage also had contributions to this great country.
Were you often in a position of talking to your colleagues about how they were teaching?
No. That's something that I regret I never was doing. I never did that. I tried my best to assimilate, because that furthered my interests and my agenda of culturally responsive teaching. And I felt in my experience that being confrontational was not going to get me what I wanted. But you should also know that I also had some amazing colleagues that were allies to what I was trying to do, and they supported what I did.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like if you're the only person of color, it seems like anyone being the only person of color in a mostly white school staff, that there is an expectation of an awful lot of extra work in educating not just students but other colleagues about aspects of this. That's I think we'll classify that under uncompensated other tasks.
No,
as
it's that Black teacher stressor. But, you know, again, it wasn't outward teaching. It was, I think, the stress became the constant having to be much better. So I always felt like I have to be a lot more knowledgeable, a lot more prepared than my counterparts in order to be at the same level. And it's the constant feeling like you are the ambassador of all things Black, and you don't want people to judge Black people by your actions. And it's something that I don't think white people think about when they go to it. They don't think, oh, well, somebody here is going to judge me because I'm white, unless you are outside of your environment.
The superintendent of the school district where you worked recently resigned after making comments about George Floyd, basically saying that Mr. Floyd would not have been in a position to have an encounter with the police if he had not tried to use a counterfeit bill, if he had not resisted the officers. Questions, and there were all these questions suddenly out there about how people at the top of the ladder in school systems can be brought into this moment that America is having with a new paradigm. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do. You know, this was a really unfortunate incident, and I think that this speaks to his experience as a law-abiding white American. He does not speak from the experience of the law-abiding black children and the law-abiding black men within his own school in terms of arrests, the law, and judicial systems. You know, it makes it perfectly obvious that it's not enough for districts to just take away the jobs of these type of leaders, leaders who lack empathy and I think lack cultural literacy. They will just simply be replaced by like-minded people, right? So I believe that it is not enough to simply write a statement of regret to the community. Districts like this, I mean, like if you Google this district right now, this is the highlight of their community. So this district, the school district, needs to present their community with a 5-year plan that ensures that more racial inclusion, more cultural sensitivity training for their board members, the administrators, their teachers, their students, and to really ensure that the curriculum is inclusive. And I have a list of things, but I'm going to just kind of nip it off and say that, you know, they just need to have a much more responsive attitude towards the racial concerns of their students of color, because your school system is a brand for your community.
Yeah. Are there other things that come to mind when you think about what systemic racism looks like within education systems?
For sure. You know, and for teachers, it's really, really hard to look at the statistics of race relations in the schools and how discriminatory some of our well-meaning actions are. There is this narrative that racism is an outward and sometimes a violent demonstration of power. But, you know, racism in America, again, it can be a lot more nuanced. And so study after study, we'll talk about, of course, we've heard about the kids of color. They're more likely to be suspended. They're more likely to be expelled or turned over to the police. And we specifically know about studies where middle school black girls, especially, you know, from age 12, they are just seen to be less innocent and they are expected to be stronger so that their emotions are recognized. The only emotions that are recognized in them is anger, because anger, you can get with anger the same thing that their white counterpart gets with tears. And so in education, we need to be very self-conscious of the narrative that we're giving the students as to the path to success. Because a white teacher teaching the student about this onboarding ramp into the economic system is not necessarily aware of the gaps and the crevices that these students of color have to overcome in order to get to the same place. We need to, you know, I really believe that if we indeed believe that education is economic development, we have to address the issue of race before we even address the issue of economic equality.
There are incidents in American history that can really inform how we think about the exercise of power against Black Americans, things like the Tulsa massacre. Why aren't events like that covered more thoroughly or even covered at all in curriculum today?
April, simply put, it is a conflict to this narrative that Black people are scary, brutal, and uncivilized. So it's just not politically and not socially acceptable to learn that Black people, when left alone, can live like white people and to the betterment of the society as a whole. So by reducing the history of Indigenous and Black people in America to teepees, ghettos, you know, you preserve this idea that they're not real Americans. They are not like us. They are hyphenated Americans. I'm American, but you're an African American. You're an Indigenous American. You're a Native American. And so those types of narratives are so important politically, I think, to preserve, that we have lost track of the plot, and we are not including those in the curriculum. That's why it's so important to talk about race and talk about race openly in schools today.
You know, this week even, this is Juneteenth, which for a lot of Black communities, it was sort of some kind of turning point. And yet it's not even, I think there are some reads of American history that aren't even aware of it. Are there things that you wish were more commonly highlighted about the, just something as simple as the spread of knowledge across the country?
Definitely. I mean, the events that we've witnessed in the past 3 weeks in our country are in the world, right? Just highlight this gap. And, you know, events like Juneteenth have been important to the Black community, especially in the South. And I think this year people should just observe that and not necessarily observe it in your own home, meaning like, you know, go on the internet and see how that is celebrated. Maybe you could want to have your own barbecue at your own house in celebration of Juneteenth. But the more you know, the more empathetic you can become. In April, you know, I want to make sure that you know that teachers will be doing a lot of soul searching this summer. It's been a tough and brutal year. And between CDC guidelines for opening schools, between teaching during the pandemic, and now really turning everything upside down in a sense that, you know, a lot of teachers have had these revelations about the way that they were delivering their content. It is very, very difficult. And I want to just, first of all, congratulate teachers who are trying their best to do some equity work. The work that the teachers will do this summer is unpaid work, because you don't get paid until, you know, September. And if there's any lawmakers, is there any Department of Education listeners out there, I want to encourage them to give us one more year without that test so that we can land. It just kind of soften our landing. And I want to really ask administrators out there, how will your community evolve because of the events of 2020? And, you know, how will you teach and how will the learning be different? What lessons will you teach your students because of the past 4 months?
Education consultant Matinga Ragatz is a former Michigan Teacher of the Year. Matinga, it's great to talk to you, as always.
Thank you, April.